Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Frug et al. Titled, The Contribution of Chymase-Dependent Formation of Ang-2 to Cardiac Dysfunction in Metabolic Syndrome of Young Rats, Roles of Fructose and EETs. This article was published April 2nd, 2020. Joining me today are Associate Editor Fabio Recchia, Lead Author Anne Huang, and Content Expert Jolt Bagui. Let's get started.
Thank you, Karen. Fructose is the sweetest of all natural carbohydrates, heavily utilized in food industry to sweeten soft drinks, juice, and baked goods. Not a surprise that fructose consumption is increasing alarmingly, especially by children, adolescents, and young adults. Well, solid scientific evidence indicates that high fructose consumption is associated with metabolic syndrome due to diverse mechanisms, in part poorly understood. In this study, Frug and colleagues tested the hypothesis that a high fructose diet elicits chymase-dependent increase in angiotensin II production and consequent oxidative stress. They administered a high fructose diet to young rats, which then developed metabolic syndrome, characterized by the classical combination of hyperglycemia, hyperinsulinemia, and hypertension, and associated decrease in cardiac output and impaired nitric oxide production. Of note, the rat hearts displayed greater chymase release by mast cells. Interestingly, these negative alterations were attenuated by TPPU, an inhibitor of soluble epoxide hydrolase, the enzyme that breaks down epoxy-causa cyanoic acid, or EET. Among its various actions, EET can indeed stabilize mast cells. The authors concluded that high fructose-driven adverse chymase-dependent increase in angiotensin II and consequent superoxide production can be prevented by EET through, at least in part, an EET-mediated stabilization of mast cells. These findings highlight chymase and soluble epoxide hydrolase as therapeutic targets for the treatment of metabolic syndrome. And this would be my first question for you. What is EET? And what is its importance as a protective factor against oxidative stress compared to other antioxidant systems in cardiac and vascular cells?
The EET, the whole name is epoxy-eicosatric nucleic acid. EETs are metabolites of arachidonic acid. As we know already, that there are three pathways responsible for metabolism of arachidonic acid. First one is very well known, the COX cyclic oxygenase that metabolizes arachidonic acid to prostaglandins, that including vasodilator prostaglandin and vasoconstrictor prostaglandins. Second pathway is the lipoxygenase that metabolizes arachidonic acid to different heats, 5, 8, 12, 15. The latest one found in around 1980 is called the third eicosanoid pathway, that is cytochrome P450, CYP. CYP metabolizes arachidonic acid into two types of products. One is 20 heat. We know this is by hydroxylase, that is very strong vasoconstrictor. Another part of the products is EET, that is strong vasodilators. So when SEH activity is increased, the EET level will reduce because it increased EET degradation. And vice versa, when SEH was inhibited, then will increase circulating tissue levels of EET. So this is why, just like SEH knockout mice, that initiate a high level of circulating EETs. Second question is the importance of EET as an antioxidant. EET can not only reduce the superoxide production by inhibition of NOx, but also it can increase their degradation by activation of SOD. So this is the main mechanism responsible for this EET-induced antioxidant. For example, the EET can prevent TNF-alpha-induced activation of NF-coupled B induce the activation of VCAM1 and interleukin-6, this kind of the signaling. So all of these cytokines, transcription factors are involved in the superoxide production. So when EET can compromise this signaling, it can protect against oxidative stress.
Thank you, Anne. So Joel, your comments on this study?
So it is quite fascinating that treatment with the pharmacological inhibitor of epoxyhydroxylase not only improves cardiac dysfunction, but also reverses systemic blood pressure and metabolic dysfunction in this animal model of metabolic syndrome. I think this is very significant, but I wonder what are the potential mechanisms that could underlie such potent beneficial systemic effect on blood pressure and systemic glucose-insulin homeostasis? And what do you think? What could be the mechanisms behind this?
EETs induce cardioprotective effects may serve as an example or model of what they call the combination therapy targeting multiple pathways. So if short, you ask what is the key actions, for example, is responsible for EET-induced reduction of blood pressure, I would summarize it. It is due to EET-induced systemic vasodilation. When the first SEH knockout mice were created in 2002, they showed the most exciting phenotype is hypotension, reduced blood pressure. Then also now, we treat animals with SEH inhibitors. The primary criteria for the efficiency, whether this inhibitor works or not, we just monitor their blood pressure. Usually, treatment with SEH inhibitor for 3 weeks, it is sufficient to reduce their blood pressure. So this is, first of all, why there's a very significant reduced blood pressure in response to the SEH inhibitors. Second, it's even a big question. You said how EET can improve insulin sensitivity. So, okay, this is a big question. I just make a long story shorter. Because one of the most important mediators or players during the pathogenesis of metabolic syndrome or the diabetes is the dysfunction of PPAR families. Okay, this is a transcription factor. It's also the nuclear receptors. The dysfunction of this PPAR family plays an important role during the pathogenesis of the diabetes. So therefore, activation of PPAR family become an essential therapeutic aim during the treatment of diabetes and metabolic syndrome. So people found that when the PPAR family is activated, it can specifically promote activity of signaling that are called insulin-sensitizing adipokines. So therefore, PPAR agonists become magic weapon, magic bullet, for the treatment of type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome.
So it is well known that ACE2 exerts several cardioprotective effects, but it appears, based on this study presented by this paper, that ACE2 becomes downregulated in this model of young metabolic syndrome. This is unfortunate, but do we know why this happens? And of course, we cannot avoid the question here, how the downregulated ACE2 in metabolic syndrome may influence the course of COVID-19 infection. In view of the fact that COVID-19 needs ACE2 to infect cells, but on the other hand, ACE2 is a cardioprotective. Anne, can you speculate on this?
This is a very exciting and a relevant question. A downregulation of ACE2, actually this phenomenon has been well recognized in different models of metabolic syndrome and diabetes. However, the specific mechanism responsible for this downregulation is not fully understood. I still believe that this is a multi-factor engaged phenomenon. In our studies, it could be due to a significant increases in fructose metabolites, including these measures, including free fatty acid, uric acid, and lactase. All of these metabolites of this fructose play crucial roles in causing insulin resistance and promoting superoxide production, followed by downregulation of S2 expression. On the other hand, the downregulation of S2 expression or deficiency of S2 expression in these animal models further worsen this angiotensin A2 receptor mediated alteration in type 2 diabetes. So indicating these two, each factors may serve as a cause for the other. and vice versa. So these two factors reduce the S2 expression and promoting angiotensin signaling. These two factors are causative for each other. One become another's cause, and another maybe also can become the first one's cause. They are the causative for each other. This is for the downregulation. So now regarding this COVID-19 needs S2 to infect cells. Basically to say, when infected by virus, this is not a specific certain virus, I just said the general, all the viruses. When body was infected by these kind of viruses, body immune system will release interferon. That is a cytokine. This reduced cytokine can upregulate S2 expression in order to provide protective effects. This process generally happens in response to all the vessels. Unfortunately, for COVID-19, the upregulation of S2 by interferon actually provides more anti-target or anti-gates for this specific virus. So based on our latest published paper in Cell, it described that the COVID receptor ACE2 is an interferon-stimulated gene in human airway epithelial cells. So regards to short questions concern whether metabolic syndrome patients, they with downregulation of S2 will change their response to COVID-19 or affect the cause of COVID-19 infection. My question is maybe not, because the metabolic syndrome induced downregulation of S2 in cardiac tissue we found, and interferon induced the upregulation of S2 in pulmonary tissue or pulmonary cells. These two, downregulation and upregulation, may involve totally different pathways. So that can be activated by different pathogenesis. One is the metabolic syndrome, one is the virus, at a different cell type in the pulmonary, in the systemic, and in a different time course and frame. So the downregulation of S2 in metabolic syndrome is a chronic response, but the virus induced the release of interferon to upregulate S2 is an acute response. So I believe that the metabolic syndrome patient even exists with downregulation of S2 may not significantly affect their response to the COVID-19 induced interferon mediated upregulation of S2 expression.
Can we say that maybe patients with metabolic syndrome or maybe older patients are less likely to be infected by COVID-19, but the syndrome is more serious and they become more critically ill? What do you think?
I think the ACE2 upregulated is a result of the infection. When virus gets into your body, then it stimulates the immune system to produce interferon. Interferon to upregulate S2 expression. So maybe not necessary to reduce their infection. Yeah, just like clinical, they found that even this patient, they have a basic disease. They even have worse prognosis of this disease. So because in the pathological situation, there's a lot of factors interact from each other.
So, and then it seems that thymines and soluble epoxide hydrolase can be therapeutic targets for the treatment of metabolic syndrome. How close are we to possible potential translation into clinical practice?
As I said previously, EET synthesis, that is CYP, contain almost 100 subfamilies. So it is quite difficult to find compounds that specifically focus on certain CYP subfamilies, for example, CYP2C. Okay, that is responsible for EET synthesis. But for the CYP2C, whether this compound can affect another CYP4A, for example, that is responsible for the EET 20 heat synthase. So even the CYP2C, there's specifically CYP2C8, CYP2C9, CYP2C23, they are all responsible for the EET synthesis. So certain compounds specific for certain gene subfamily is quite difficult. The preferred way is to block EET degradation to inhibit SEH, because degradation is only basically is mediated by SEH, not lots of subfamilies. So therefore, the SEH inhibitor developed. So while the SEH inhibitors can be used in clinical treatment, I would say quite possible. If I remember correctly, in 2000 and 2002, SEH inhibitors were enrolled in phase 2 clinical trial for the treatment of hypertension and type 2 diabetes. And also, in phase 1 single and multiple dose studies in health human volunteers, these two clinical trials discontinued. But so far as I know, still the clinical trial for SEH inhibitor in insulin resistance is still undergoing. You ask how long? I don't know how long, but whether it's possible, my answer is yes, it's quite possible.
Very well. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Jolt, for this insightful discussion. Kara?
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.